Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation. Well, our guest tonight is Forrest Liggett of the Council of 28 Grandfathers and my ubiquitous sidekick. I think I'm going to start calling you Badger, Mark, because that's what you do. Say hello,
well,
guys.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Bluewater, you said that.
Yeah.
When I went down to Hopi, guess what Kachina I brought back with me?
Oh, okay.
Badger.
Well, Forrest, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, and then we'll move on.
Well, I'm just a regular guy living out here in Missouri. I've been walking the Red Road for about 19 years. Started out as a Christian missionary to the Indians, and somewhere along the line I sort of got converted.
Born again Cherokee, yeah, I know.
Yeah, so I've just been really blessed in this path to be taught by a lot of good elders and teachers, and been able to see a lot of wonderful things over the years that Creator's is showed his hand. And
you know, there's an elder there. It's been so long since I spoke with him. His first name's John, but he lives in a cabin somewhere up central Missouri. And he visited me once, and we emailed. But he told me, he said, you know, there's lots of Cherokees that are rediscovering their heritage, and they're interested in spiritual ways, but he says they're afraid of going to hell.
Yeah.
I said, for what? I said, the Cherokee way is caring and sharing.
And, you know, that's the teachings Creator has always given. And he said it in different ways to different people, but it's the same teaching. And teaching number one is always love. And teaching number two is always respect. And if you do those two things, everything else falls in place.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you've been privileged to get out and travel more than I have, and which is a good thing. And I did my traveling back in the early 90s, then I just couldn't afford it anymore. But you've been getting around. You guys have a gathering coming up here pretty quick?
Well, we don't. We had one here in Missouri 2 years ago, Return to the Sacred Fire Gathering. And that was sort of a continuation of the Eagle Condor gatherings that have been going on since the 90s, starting with the Mayas down there. And then down to South America a few times with the Incas, and then up here to Sedona 3 years ago down there in Arizona. And then we continued up here the next year. But there's a lot of things going on right now. We had a meeting of elders and wisdom keepers in February up in Pennsylvania. They had people, you know, one from Africa, one from Australia, Mexico, and the Algonquins came down from Quebec, and Pennsylvania, Ohio, Arkansas, Missouri. Had a real good weekend, and the basic theme for that is oneness. You know, we are all one. And I saw a picture of a medicine wheel. I was teaching a medicine wheel class last week, and it was red, white, black, and yellow, like the Lakota colors, and each arm of the medicine wheel was a human arm with the hands gripping in the middle, a red, white, black, and yellow arm. And that's, you know, the goal is to bring all peoples together to mend the sacred hoop. It's going to take everybody.
Oh. Well, I missed the I had heard about the gathering that you went to in North Carolina not long ago. I guess it's about almost a month ago now. Last year, Joe Sittingall told me, well, there's going to be a gathering at the new moon, the first new moon in of spring. And I had some arrangements to go, and I originally was going to go with you, and then Chief Betty wanted to go, and then right at the last minute, things he has a disabled wife, and so I wasn't able to go. But this whole thing kind of centered around a certain elder, and who's the man that took the fire back to North Carolina. And wouldn't you know, a couple days after the gathering, you know, Walker Calhoun passed away, and I went, wow. And you know, Joe told me a little bit about what their plans were. And but yeah, tell us, you know, go ahead and ramble. This is Old Home Week. Everybody that's listening, pull up a log, sit by the fire, you know, light a candle. You know, it always helps to have a fire burn.
Well, that gathering you're talking about a few weeks ago there in North Carolina, you know, it's kind of a good thing you didn't come because where Terry lives is the last house on the mountain road.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have four-wheel drive to get up there. You have to leave the cars down at the bottom of the
mm-hmm.
about a hill. It's the mountains. The motorhome wouldn't have gotten near there. He would have to park the motorhome in town
mm-hmm.
at the Ingalls and been shuttled in and out. And then it started raining, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the people weren't able to do purifications before they got there. So Terry prayed for, you know, rain to purify everybody.
Oh, my.
So here come the thunder beings right over the sacred ground. And here comes the rain. You know, so we got purified. But then there was the hawks, and one eagle was flying overhead talking to us in the storm. And usually they don't fly during the storm. They either go above it or they go away. These guys came to talk to us during the storm. So after 2 hours of that, Roy Spotted Eagle, I said, hey, did you bring your drum, sing some songs, and send the rain away? I said, well, no, I didn't bring it. All I got is Lakota songs. This is a Cherokee gathering. He says, this is an all-nations gathering. Here, use my drum. By the fourth song, the sun came out. By the fifth song, the rain was gone. Creator
wow.
purified us, and and the weather was fine for the actual ceremony up there at the sacred ground, because we have a social fire lower, and then the sacred ground is up higher. But, it was pretty muddy by then.
Wow.
But, some good teachings. It's a good start for Terry and transporting that sacred fire. Walker Calhoun was almost in a coma down there in near Cherokee. And when that fire was lit, he woke up. And he started eating and drinking again, and he sang songs all day long while we were up there. And then a day later, he crossed over. He finally completed his assignment.
That's pretty typical of people that are getting ready to pass. They could be asleep or in a coma, and then they'll wake up for a day, and then they're gone.
Yeah, so he knew when that fire was lit, and he stayed up and supported with songs while we were doing the ceremony up there, and then when it was all over, he went home.
Wow. Wow. I wish I would have had a chance to meet him. I know his brother will, and his other kinfolk, they'll carry on. They know what to do.
Yeah, I hope they're able to, because they have not paid much attention the last 20 years. Terry Miller was the one that stayed down there and worked with him for the last 7 years, and Walker taught him and gave him permission to do this and asked him to take it off the reservation so more people could come. Because it's a very closed ceremony down in Cherokee. And, this is going to be an all-nation ceremony. Walker wanted this information to get out to all people.
Yeah. Well, I also understand that he felt that the federally recognized nations needed to stop going to war against the disenfranchised Cherokees.
Yeah, first of all, we're all related. But
right.
If you're Cherokee, then you should at least, recognize that the Cherokees. And they do seem to have some kind of a turf war if you don't have one of the federal cards from the Dawes prison roll list, then you're not a Cherokee. Well,
I was really shocked. I can't remember what year, but I was going through a website. It's the Chronicles of Oklahoma. It's online. And I was reading about a treaty that all the tribes of Oklahoma and the United States government were signatories to after the Civil War. It was a treaty of amity and friendship. And in that treaty, all of these nations had to promise never to fight between each other and the United States government or the United States government. But the Cherokee reserved the right to continue their ancient war inside their own nation. Look it up. I think it was like 1866. And the interesting thing about it was the United States government promised to protect the Cherokees. They had a fort at Fort Gibson. And then a year before the Civil War, and this is after 10 years of Civil War amongst the Cherokees, U.S. troops pull out. The Confederates move in. They send in who was that guy that wrote Morals and Dogma? The Big Mason. He was the Indian agent. I'll remember his name here in a minute. Very famous guy. He was the
Pike.
Indian agent. Yeah, Albert Pike.
Albert.
So Stan Waddy and his bunch more or less took over the reins of the government of course, after the Civil War, the federal government came within one vote of separating the Southern Cherokees and the Northern Cherokees. As a matter of fact, they set aside their own court system and their own government, but they came short of separating them as a nation. But something like 10,000 Southern Cherokees left and went to South America. I saw some kind of TV program about the Cherokees that had gone, and they still had the first Cherokee Rifles battle flag. They all dressed up. They got together and danced once a year. They all spoke Spanish,
mm-hmm.
and or Portuguese. I can't remember. I think they were in Brazil, but they all got together, and of course they all look like, you know, South Americans by then. But you know, there was several commands that they left the United States and went to Mexico, then there was a couple thousand Southern Cherokees that rode up from, or Texas Cherokees, that had been there. They served as a buffer between Santa Ana and Houston. If they hadn't been there, would there have been no Republic of Texas? And they came to Tahlequah to enroll, and they were driven away at gunpoint by U.S. troops. And so you have this internal war that's been going on, and you have thousands of Cherokees. They have no idea about their own history, and they got this war going on, and Joe Sittingall was telling me that they have video proof that the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma is spending nearly $1 million going to war against the unrecognized Cherokees. Hey, listen, I've got a caller on the line. I want to play Gordon Lightfoot's Cherokee Bend for 5 minutes, then we'll continue. How's that sound?
Okay,
here we go. I'll be taking off mic.
Father was a man who could never understand the shame on a red man's face. So they lived in the hills and they never came down to the street in the white man's place. Early in the spring when the snow had disappeared, they came down with a bag of skins. In the fall of the year of 1910, Daddy died by the road down in Cherokee Bend. Daddy didn't like what the white man said about the dirty little kid at his side. Daddy didn't like what the white man did, nor the deal or the way that he lied. There was blood on the floor of the government store when the men took his daddy away. And the boy stayed by till he come to his end, and he run like the wind from Cherokee Bend. Now the mother was alone, was at hand, and she prayed to her spirit kin. It was warm in the lodge in the Kentucky hills on the day when the boy came in. Then a blizzard came down and it covered up the door till they thought that it never would end. And he told her the tale of the terrible affair in the government store down in Cherokee Bend. Daddy didn't like what the white man said, but the dirty little kid at his side. Daddy didn't like what the white man did, nor the deal or the way that he lied. For 3 long days and 3 long nights, they wept and they mourned and sang. She returned to her work and her weaving, and they tried to forget about Cherokee Bend. But they hunted what they could, and they lived for a time that way. But the food ran low and the meat went bad, and she said to the boy one day, I'm leaving tonight and I never will return from the land of my spirit's kin. You must take what you need and trade what you can for a red man's bread down in Cherokee Bend. It wasn't very long till she closed her eyes and he wrapped her in a robe. He found her a place on the side of the hill, and he buried her in the snow. Early in the spring, he was seen coming down with his load looking ragged and thin. Not a year had gone by when he stood once again in the government store down in Cherokee Bend. He was 10 years tall in a redskin blue, so he hadn't much face to save. And the men sat around and they laughed and they clowned at the top of a criminal's grave. And a man from the east didn't smile when he said, you're the son of that Indian scum. If you value your hide, then you better abide by the white man's rules here in Cherokee Bend. But Daddy didn't like what the white man said, but the dirty little kid at his side. Daddy didn't like what the white man did, nor the deal or the way that he lied. Then he spit on the floor of the government store, and it took to no good end. At the close of the day, they had taken him away to the white man's gold down in Cherokee Bay. Been 21 years since the boy disappeared. Where he run to, nobody knows. But they say he fell in with a man named Jim, and he rides in the rodeo. He returns all alone to a place hidden deep in the Kentucky clan. And it's pretty well known who hauled up the stone to the grave on the hill above Cherokee Bay. Daddy didn't like what the white man said, but the dirty little kid had decided. Daddy didn't like what the white man did, no the deal or the way that he lied. There was blood on the floor of the government store when the men took his daddy away. It was 1910 and they never had a friend when he died by the road down in Cherokee Bay. It was 1910 and they never had a friend when he died by the road down in Cherokee Bay.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look, Nation.
Well, we're back, and guess what? Brian Wilkes has joined us, and we got a heavyweight crowd here. I'm just going to sit back and let you guys talk.
Yeah, Brian's another one of the grandfathers on the council, so it's good to have and him and Kay are the two of the main guys keeping things organized and keeping things rolling. So it's an honor to have Brian on the radio here with us.
No, thank you. No, I just wanted to mention, since you were speaking about Grandfather Walker, I'd known him off and on over about the last 20 years, and we forget sometimes, you know, we have this expression we throw around quite a bit at funerals, that when a traditional elder dies, it's like a library burning to the ground. But in the case of some people, like Grandfather Walker, it's more like an entire university.
Yeah.
But we forget that sometimes the thread by which these traditions continue is very thin. I remember when he had despaired of finding anybody who was even interested in learning the Eastern dialect, much less, you know, shouldering the burden of carrying the traditions. And it was kind of appropriate because his uncle, Will West Long, a generation before, had also despaired of it when he was pretty much the last tradition keeper there in the East. And it wasn't until Walker came back from World War II that Walker stepped up to the job. And so, like, in two times in the past century, it's been pretty much down to one person.
And, you know, I don't know what their reorganization is going to do down there now, because there's kind of a vacuum actually on the reservation, because the Sacred Fire now has moved up to Weaverville off the reservation, so it's accessible to more people.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, you know, what Walker's family is going to do as far as that fire down at Cherokee. From what I understand, the people that own the land where the Sacred Fire was said that when Walker crosses over that they're going to develop the land.
Well, you know what happened when Redbird Smith passed away? His son, his son, you know, took the wampum belts and he moved somewhere else and then started a new stomp ground and named it after his dad.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in that, if you, that video that Bill Jones made back in the early 80s, I guess that was the first time the belts had been brought out in public, but that's a little bit of the family drama.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was maybe about Jesus or something. I don't know.
Well, I think it was, I think you're speaking of Samuel was his name, the son who broke, and it was also Samuel who had the pipe they show in that documentary, that rather large black pipe.
Yep.
And the
grocery sack. Looked like it had been through World War
II. Yeah, it also looked, was appropriate because it would look like it was big enough you could pack a lunch in it. And I actually know some of the history of that pipe, and that pipe is in private hands now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, so, you know that, look, for all we talk about, all of our great walk in balance and harmony and all that, Cherokees don't get along. I mean, my goodness, we can, you know, one of my favorite jokes is, what do you get when you cross a Cherokee and a rock? A rock that can hold a grudge.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's forever drama in Cherokee
County. Yeah, there always is. And, you know, so like some of it, I mean, I was, years ago I met, it was strange because I was out in Tahlequah, and I'm sitting there with my adoptive mother having breakfast, and over walks Hastings Shade, who was a full-blood fluent both Cherokee Nation and Kitu'a. He was the vice principal chief of the Cherokee Nation at that time, but he walks over and sits down, starts having breakfast with us, and in walks Chad Smith, and he sits down and joins us. So everybody was like,
that table.
Everybody was sitting there getting along for a little while. It was like, oh, okay. And, you know, so it's like I've had my dealings back and forth just a little bit with Chad Smith, and yeah, I try not to badmouth anybody. I try to get along with everybody, and everybody has their part to play. And I think for some of us, our the part that some of these people play is to challenge us to get our facts straight and get our act together. And the, you know, some of the people will never accept us unless we can demonstrate we are who we say we are.
Well, John Red Hat, who was enrolled in both nations, he was old enough
mm-hmm.
to be enrolled. Well, he told me that a certain principal chief, and I will not name names, called him one night and said he had a dream. After the dream, he was concerned about the survival of the Cherokee Nation. And, of course, you guys know about the Kitu'a origin story and prophecy. And
mm-hmm.
But, you know, Red Hat told him, he says, we don't have so many friends that we can afford to turn away these strangers. that are our, mm-hmm. our close relatives. But, you know, he continued to, Chief Smith continued to kind of push people away. He didn't. He agreed to go speak to anybody as long as you weren't characterizing yourself as a band or a nation or a tribe. But I know for a fact that when all this was going on and they were slamming me also and everybody else, that Hastings Shade, they're very weak. That they said we're no longer going to deal with anybody that claims to be a band, tribe, or nation. I know that Hastings was meeting with the guys from the Southern Band up in Kansas. So, you know, things go on,
mm-hmm.
and there's a public face, and then there's, you know, what goes on.
Yeah, I do know.
Now,
well, I know whenever we formed the Southern Band back in the late 90s, we had two of our organizational meetings there at Cherokee, and Hastings actually came out from Tahlequah. So,
I remember now. It was you that told me. Okay, my memory is being refreshed.
Yeah. I don't know about the incident in Kansas, but this was in North Carolina.
Yeah, I just knew that Hastings was meeting with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure where. And
yeah,
but interesting. Yeah, the politics is, but this has been going on for a long time, and it started a long time ago, and it's kind of like nobody even knows why we're even fighting anymore.
Well, you know what it reminds me of? It always reminds me of that one scene in Casablanca where the police inspector says, "I am shocked to find gambling going on here," and in the next breath is one of the waiters bringing him his plate of winnings. So it's like there's what you say publicly and all the pronouncements you make, and then there's what goes on when you think nobody's looking. You just are going to speak your heart because, you know, I mean, you spent enough time with Rolling Thunder to know the same people who knocked him down as a fraud and a wannabe, when their families got sick, they sure checked him out.
Yeah.
They sure came to him. And I know that within my family, some of the people who call me a fraud and wannabe, they don't mind coming to our family whenever they have problems and whenever they have illness.
Mm-hmm.
So you just nod your head and go, yeah, you had to say that in public. I understand. Okay. Just kind of, that's our old saying, you know, when you're going to take on any leadership position, you have to develop a hide 7 layers thick.
Right.
But the good thing is it only has to be on the back of you.
Because that's where all the arrows are coming in from.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. You know, it's only about half as heavy a burden as you expect.
Very interesting. Well, Mala Spotted Eagle more or less told me. It's not just Cherokee. He said the reason why they moved their grounds to over to Blatchley, Oregon was,
yeah.
That, you know, he was enrolled with the his mom, I guess, was the
Shoshone.
I can't remember what nation she was, but
Shoshone.
He said, you know, if you leave it on the reservations, sooner or later it's going to be just people with cards that can use those grounds, and then after that it's going to be just a certain family. And he says I don't want to play that game.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys, what else have you guys cooked up?
Well, I don't know. I know some of the people are going to Scotland in July for a series of teachings. Are you familiar with Benny LeBeau? Shoshone fella? Yeah, are you speaking to me?
Yeah.
Yes, I know who he is.
At the time of the summer equinox, they're doing a 4,000-mile medicine wheel, holding ceremony in different places, and one of them's going to be up at Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and another one's going to be down there at in Arizona, south of Sedona. So those are going on here
in a couple of months. Some of the Kogi elders are coming up from Colombia, and some of the other elders from different Colombian tribes are coming up to that. So
there's things going on there. Robert Goswell's widow told me about something that's going on. Something had started in L.A. at the Crystal Skull Convention, and it didn't get finished. So they're going to finish it. That's about all I can say. So there's a lot going on this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we're going to try to get Benny on. I sent him an email, let him know we're back, and had him on two or three times before. And he's another friend that grew up on the same res, Kent White Eagle Neild, and hope to get. I don't think he's ever been interviewed anywhere. He lives down in Washington County, Utah, near St. George, and he's operated a nonprofit down there for a long time. It just takes loads of stuff in to the Hopi, and he's a descendant of Washakie, the same people as Benny's. So, what do you think about all this, Mark? You're awful quiet tonight.
Oh. Yeah, it's interesting. I was just kind of waiting till I got to some things about the about
guys. Mark is our
video.
He's our Mayan calendar. I'd say savant, but he's but that's what he is. And this guy knows stuff about the Mayan calendar that he's got so much insight. It's unbelievable.
Mm.
Not
that's
mine.
Good.
I just get thrown a bone every once in a while.
Yeah.
Well, anybody can do it. Everybody, it's just a matter of listening and paying attention.
Well, that's true. Well, I guess, Forrest, I guess you want to talk a little bit about James Adair tonight. And I'm just going to let you and Brian hold forth on this. You guys can... have probably read the source material more recently than I have, so go ahead, guys.
Okay, well, this little project started, years ago. I was down at Tahlequah at the bookstore and saw this book, and I'd heard about it, and it had been out of print, so I grabbed a copy and read it and started highlighting it. My wife gave it away. We got three or four more copies. I started highlighting, and she gave those away. So it's a real interesting book on, Adair was probably, he was Scots-Irish, came over to Charlestown Landing about 1730, started trading with the Catawba Indians down in South Carolina, and then he started trading with the Cherokees over across the Smokies, because it was a more lucrative trade, and he traded with the Southeast Indians until 1768, so over 30 years. And during that time, he got to be real good friends with them, and he noticed a whole lot of similarities between the Southeast tribes, their language, their customs, their religious practices, and the Hebrew. So in this book, he puts down 23 similarities, or he calls arguments, about the similarities between the Southeastern tribes and the ancient Hebrews. So it was an interesting read. My daughter had a college history class here a few months ago, and she had to write a report on a history book. So since she's a member of the Lower Eastern Cherokee Nation of South Carolina, she decided to do something Cherokee, and she came up with this report, which cuts the book down to 7 pages, which is a lot easier to chew. But, that goes along with the article or the Ancient American magazine that came out a year or so ago with the DNA of the Cherokee in North America. Time some of that back to Middle Eastern DNA. So just some interesting possibilities there. I mean, this subject's been debated for 200 or 300 years, but That's just interesting, some of the the information that's available.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Well, I can fill in one or two quick blanks for you there, Forrest. The DNA material you're probably talking about was by Dr. Donald Yates.
Yep.
Yeah, it's one of my cousins. And
well,
I do
the insider to talk about it.
Yeah. And actually should have him on the show talking about it because he loves talking about this. And we have been collaborating on several books. And one thing we're doing is that we are going to be releasing both the Cherokee and English version of one of the prophecy books, which was first put into print in the 19th century. But one thing that people are not always aware of with Adair's own background is Adair, the reason he saw these similarities is he himself was of Jewish ancestry.
Well, now that doesn't surprise me. It's not mentioned in his biography.
It wouldn't have been at those times.
But how would he have known that much Hebrew
language?
Yeah. You know, in 1730 or 40.
Well, they might not have been practicing, but their families were involved in trade, just like Joseph of Arimathea was. You know, he was in charge of all trade and the routes for the Roman Empire, and so you know Jesus and his people could get around on a pass. And but these guys knew and had the family connections, and this is what Panther Yates talked about was the idea of crypto Jews, and if it wasn't for these people. They're the people that brokered the treaties and were the pass-throughs and go-betweens between the governments and the governments. And thank heavens they were there.
A lot of Cherokees to this day keep customs in their family that each thinks is just some sort of peculiarity or some eccentricity. And I'm always bursting out laughing whenever I run into some of this, and I'll say, and your family, they did that? Well, did they also do this? And did they also do this? And did they also do this? And now they get upset because they want to know how I've been researching their family without their knowledge. And I'm going, well, you know, your family was keeping Jewish traditions. Now, there are two reasons for this. One is that they were themselves of Jewish or crypto-Jewish ancestry and kept these traditions while proclaiming themselves to be Christians. The other is that when Cherokees traditionally study something or take something up, they do it in depth. And when, for many Cherokees, when they became
Christian and studied the Bible, they adapted Jewish law. They didn't quite have this idea of the Old Testament laws being superseded by the gospel. And so a lot of Cherokees will keep Jewish dietary law. I've run into this quite a bit.
Interesting. Well, you know, this debate's been going on for a long time, but John Red Hat explained it this way. Now, John Groot was born in Ava, Missouri, mm-hmm. in 1930. He was brought up by two full-blood Ketuah grandmothers and a freed woman. And he said that his grandmothers pronounced Ketuah with a trilled R of all things. And he said the Eastern dialect, also known as the Southern dialect, used to have the R sound in it. And he said, now I've talked with several rabbis and their jaws just drop when I say, well, look, in Cherokee the word for our people is Ani, and in Hebrew it's Ami, and I said, we are Ani Keturah. I said, we're the people of Keturah. We're the people that Abraham blessed, sent away and blessed to excel in mm-hmm. herbalism and shamanism.
Yes.
That's who we are, and that's why, you know, the Torah existed. We know the Torah existed before it was written down because the recognition code that Joseph gave his brothers to give to Jacob for him and to bring Benjamin to Egypt was the part of the Torah they were discussing when he was sold into slavery. So there's mm-hmm. there's nothing new about what the Hebrews were involved with and
right. Well, we it also brings up this entire idea that got sort of whitewashed in the late 19th century, this idea that it was only white northern Europeans who were coming over to settle America. It was anybody who could get on a boat. And the patterns of settlement in the Southeast, especially in West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, were heavily Jewish. So you have, for example, the first synagogues west of the Appalachians being built in Lexington and Wheeling. And it's just fascinating when you get into it and you get into who various people were and who they were working for, like the Daniel Boone family. And, they were working as surveyors for a Jewish-owned company in Virginia, and you have all of these department store chains in the South that were Jewish. I mean, there's this extensive Jewish history and a Sephardic history in the Southeast. Now, the one thing that to me is fascinating to anyone who's had their DNA done, who is of Cherokee mixed blood ancestry, almost all the time there are Berber matches.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into the point of, well, you, I'm sure, Forrest and William, you know these stories better than I do, that we came in our migration story and there was an island where we stayed for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You recall that?
Off the shore of South America. That's the Ketuah origin story.
Yeah. What was the name of it?
That I don't know.
Ah.
Supposedly, the elders had foreknowledge that the island was going to sink because
yes.
the government was doing something, with white fire. And I'm wondering if they weren't misusing crystals, because all around the Caribbean basin, there are mysterious holes that don't have any tool marks, and they're dug mm-hmm. in solid rock. And this is the Atlantis. I mean, years ago in the late 50s, early 60s, I was in this drive-in, and I saw this movie about Atlantis and this destruction and how they use these giant mirrors and crystals. And I'm going, whoa. Oh, by the way, I just emailed Don Yates. And if
uh-huh. Oh, great, great. Well, one of the things is, okay, you remember the old word for a mountain?
No, I don't.
The old word for mountain is Atala.
Ah, okay.
Okay, the modern is Odali. But the old word in that lower dialect you were talking about is Atala. Atala is not any old mountain. It's a specific mountain. It's the mountain. It's the Berber name for the mountain which we today call Mount Teide, which is in the Canary Islands.
Oh.
And it's a snow-capped mountain most of the year. It's one of the few snow-capped mountains in Africa. And it's the name for that whole chunk of land there. And when I sent gifts over to some of the Berber elders a few years ago, I said, we have a story that we came from a place we call the mountains Atala. And we came from a place with cedars and high mountains, and that we must always live in a place with cedars and high mountains so that we can
mm-hmm.
be prepared for the next flood. You've heard that, too.
Right, yeah, Cherokees are always afraid of floods.
And
mm-hmm.
they said immediately, yes, we know the story, and here's the rest of it. Boom, 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 boom. So the Berbers accept very readily that we are their distant cousins.
And they live where?
They live North Africa, Morocco, Canary Islands, and the
Phoenicians.
Written language.
They're Phoenicians.
Yeah,
that's
they
what
are Phoenicians.
They are Phoenicians.
Mauritanians, yes.
Moors.
And
you know, every Japanese
mm-hmm.
ship has the word Maru, and that's the old name for the Mauritanians. And the color maroon is the color that the Phoenicians used to be called red men because they
mm-hmm.
they wore that color or dyed their skin that way.
Yes.
Well, that's who they are.
Yeah, but it's fascinating. And as you mentioned, that documentary was made back in 1984. You might remember Chief Smith, who not Chief Chad Smith, but Chief Smith of the...
William.
Titua, William Smith. There was a little line in there which most people missed when he's describing the origin, and he says, because of his heavy accent, it came out Israel, but it was like, we are Israel. Not we are related to, we are Israel.
Mm-hmm. He says, and that in there, he says, it says we're Israel.
Israel
Psalmers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Second Maccabees, there is an account, I'm told, of the departure of the firekeepers from the Jerusalem temple. We call ourselves keepers of the fire.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of speculation.
Achilahagi, which is supposedly one of the real origin of the expression chalagi.
Uh-huh.
Fire keepers, fire carriers.
Yeah, I'm looking at Wiki on Berber people, and there's their turbans, and I always kind of wondered if Cherokees didn't get the turbans from that boatload of Turkish and Portuguese sailors that Francis Drake dumped off on the Outer Banks of North Carolina, and basically a Cherokee traditional dress like you might see the Cherokees of Texas wear. It looks quite a bit like a Turkish sailor, but here the Berbers and Rolling Thunder said, hey. He says a Cherokee man likes to keep his ears covered.
Yes. Yes, and there's a reason for that. Man, you are taking me back. You know, it's been 15 years since he passed.
1997, January.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Let me just ask real quickly, do you have your Facebook open?
I do.
Hold on. This won't do a whole lot for our radio audience, but try to stifle your gasp here in just a moment.
While you're looking at that, I'm told the reason why holy men wear things on their heads is because there's so much energy going on around their minds that it helps us keep grounded. You know, I tried shaving my head once, and I found after a while I started becoming... it was when I moved to Crestone. You know, I shaved and I started getting real aggressive, and then I read accounts like in the Book of Mormon. It says that you know the Lamanites shaved their heads and they became warlike and everything. So yeah, there was reasons why you know the Cherokees didn't keep real long hair, but you know we didn't shave. And but keeping your ears covered, RT never really did explain why. So I guess I'm finally gonna find out.
Does it have anything to do with sometimes having two or three wives and not wanting to hear them all at once?
Well, now you know why I'm single. But as it was explained to me, there was a traditional shape of both the skull and the ear of the royal class. And the turban was, or various head coverings were, to disguise the fact that their successors no longer had that.
Hmm. Interesting.
Like, yeah, what shape skull do I have under here? What shape ears? You're not going to find out.
Interesting. Well, I know back in the late 70s, my first wife and I were in a gift shop at down the circus, and we call it the circus, a lot of people do it in Cherokee, and there was this book called Cherokee Cooking, and in the back there was an account of how this professor from Harvard came down in the 30s to look at some of our burials, and he noticed, and all you have to do is just put in ancient Cherokee organs, or actually it's chickamauga-cherokee.com/origins.html. And this anthropologist in 1949, his name was Walter Carroll, and it was published in the Durham Morning Herald. So Dr. Kelly explained that his initial concern with Cherokee origins occurred when he came to the reservation in 1929 as a fellow of the National Research Council. He traveled from Harvard to make a racial study of the present tribes, principally their head forms, which are dolichocephalic, like Aryans. And he says, like many of the Basque indigenous people of the mountains of Spain possessed anciently. In contrast, he said, with the more southeastern tribes, which are round-headed. And he says, speculations about the origins of the Cherokee, Dr. Kelly said, has agitated the minds of anthropologists for 50 years and more, beginning with James Mooney, who made investigations on Cherokee myths and traditions at the turn of the century. Anthropologists have always been intrigued by the ethnic picture of the Cherokee holding the great central massif of the southern Appalachians, a mountain people whose culture always reflected adaptation to uplands, so blah, blah, blah. Well, that's all fine and good, but then when they discovered the Cactus Hill Point in Virginia, which was a projectile point embedded in a charred log, and they dated this thing to 17,000 years ago, all of a sudden, they're tying that point in with the Solutrians, and I'm going, oh my gosh, the Catua elders said we migrated here in boats before the Stone Age. It's all true. And it's in Ice Age Columbus. I believe it was National Geographic and History Channel who really discovered America.
Right.
And that explains, it also explains why some elders say that all of our originally 80-plus clans originated from the Bear Clan, which originated in Europe. It's the oldest clan.
Yes. Did you ever hear RT say that? I'm sorry. I keep feeling like I'm stealing the show from Forrest.
Oh no,
here.
No, no.
Okay. Did you ever hear RT say that in the old days we had tunnels under the ocean?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I could never figure out what he meant by that, and then I realized that might be an old expression for currents.
Mm.
That there are currents in the ocean, and he said that the current that starts in the Cherokee country ends up in the British Isles.
He did say that.
Yeah.
I think it might have had something to do. When I interviewed Chakosh Alho'o, she said that anytime RT wanted to talk with the Mad Bear personally, well, she saw this happen. RT was at her house in the Bay Area. He walked out onto the balcony, shut the door, lit his pipe. 15 minutes later, here comes Mad Bear knocking on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And sometime after that, somebody on the res in New York found his pickup truck parked on the side of the road and drove it home. And she said that he could travel without his suitcase. And Hebrew tradition says that at any one time, there's 36 tzaddiks that can travel anywhere they want to at any time.
Uh-huh.
By means unknown to, you know.
Yeah. Okay, open that image in your email.
Okay. That Jalagi?
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Except it's not Jalagi.
No, it looks like CWY, yeah, or yeah. C with an E.
But it's actually Amazigh.
It's Berber.
It's Berber.
Huh? Oh, you're kidding.
Do you remember the story that Walker told us, and so did it was repeated by Robert Connolly, that at one time all that was left of the written language was the name for the people, and it was three characters, and that the written language was reassembled or recreated from that. And you've always heard that this explanation, which linguistically makes no sense at all, but it's the official cover story, that the word Cherokee means people of strange speech.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not really, but the word Berber does. It's what the Greeks called those people,
mm-hmm.
the people of strange speech. What they called themselves was the free people.
Free and noble men are free people, yep.
Yeah. And isn't that what our ancestors say we called ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the word.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put it
under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is how we apparently, you know, the first piece of land that Cherokee sold off was that corridor between Charleston along the
mm-hmm.
river. But
yep.
we've always had an outlet to the sea, but we always moved up in to the mountains. And this is, I'm sure everybody out there thinks I'm a total nut, but when Mad Bear Anderson visited Salt Lake back in 72, he and RT, they went there to tell the Mormons, hey, you need to get back to your original set of instructions. And when Mad Bear was being driven back to Salt Lake, at the first place up in the mountains east of Salt Lake is called Parley Summit, and you can see the valley floor. And he made the driver stop, kind of freaked
mm-hmm.
out and got out and looked around. And he got back in the car, and he was kind of quiet. And the driver said, well, what's wrong, Mad Bear? And he said, oh, it's too bad. And he says, the whole valley, it's so beautiful, but it's going to be flooded someday. And Orson Scott Card has written this into a book called The Folk of the Fringe. And but I was back in 91, and the first time I asked Creator a question, I said, well, you know, why? You know, there's this story about how the Mormons are going to have to return to the middle of the country from the mountains. And I said to Creator, I said, look, Roland Sutter told me, never go before an elder without a couple of good questions. Here's my first question. Why are we going to have to take a horseshoe-shaped route? Why can't we just go right back across the plains? And then after 10 or 15 minutes, my body started to feel like it was kind of vibrating a little bit. And in my mind, I heard two words, which were the flood, which meant nothing at all to me. And here recently, I found out that Pope John Paul did actually reveal the third Fatima prophecy back in the 80s to a group of Catholics, and that's on the front page of prophecykeepers.com. He said, well, they asked him, well, what was the prophecy? He said, well, he says, if I were to tell you that entire continents would be swept over by ice and water and millions of people would be killed in an instant, that's not something so much would be so desired to be heard. But they said that this was associated with a certain star. This is the Catholic mystics. This is the same thing that the Hopi say, you know, which is the same thing that Patrick Jarrell said. And that movie 2012 was loosely based on Patrick Jarrell's How to Survive 2012.com. You know, so yeah, we're crazy like foxes. We're afraid of floods. And then when I talked to White Buffalo, who's Ottawahi for life of the Cherokee Nation Tejas, he started laughing, and I said, "What are you laughing at, Buffalo?" And he says, "What year was that?" I said, 1991, and he said, "You know what, Otter?" He says, "I was on top of a mountain, Lookout Mountain, west of Denver, on Vision Quest." And he says, I saw in vision a wave coming across the Great Plains, and he says it flushed Denver like a toilet.
Whoa. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but, wow, this is the first I've heard of the Berber. It makes sense. It really does.
Oh, yeah, I'll send you a few more, but...
Well, Rolling Thunder said, he says that we come from a lot of people. He said there's a lot of people that have joined us, and he said originally some of us even came from the Pleiades, and you know there's a connection to Judaism there, because, you know, they that's a very important constellation for them.
Well, the other thing you get into there is that some of this is poetic language.
Mm-hmm.
And a constellation can also refer to a constellation of islands.
Yeah.
And Pleiades, what does that literally mean?
So, in the Revelations, it's referred to as the seven candlesticks.
Yes, but do you know what the word Pleiades literally means, the Greek word?
It's seven sisters, but I'm not sure what
it is. Yeah, they are seven sisters, and that's the name of their mother is Pleia, and Pleia sometimes is translated as dove, but is also can be translated as rope. Okay, it is an alternate name. The alternate name is Atlantides.
So oh my gosh!
They are the daughters of Pleia, but they are also the daughters of Atlas, which is the name given to that group of islands. The Canaries, the Cap Verde, the Azores.
About an hour and a half ago, I was cooking dinner. And actually, my wife started it, and I was in here messing with the computer. And she was cooking pork chops. And I said, honey, I said, you're using that old spatula. I said, use the big one. I said, it gives you more leverage. And I held the thing up in the air. I said, who was it that said, give me a place to stand, and I will move the world? And here you are talking about Atlas.
Yes. Actually, that was Archimedes. But
oh, yeah, Archimedes. Yeah. Yep. Archimedes.
Yeah, but it's – and what are the mountains called on the coast of Africa facing those islands? Those are the Atlas Mountains.
Well, those are the ones that are could possibly erupt and cause a tsunami.
Well, those are off the Canaries.
Off the Canaries.
Yes. That's Mount Tete. That's Atala.
Oh, my.
Atala itself is the one that is already broken into fragments. It's just a question of when that one fragment slides into the water. But that's on the island, on the mainland, that curve of Morocco and Algeria. Those are the Atlas Mountains. That's where Atlas was sent to hold up the world.
Wow.
All right, so, and it's also the land of cedars. The cedars are largely gone, but they are still there. So when I said to this, I sent through a written message, I sent a stone from the Trail of Tears.
I said, we have this custom of exchanging stones with different native communities, and a stone was taken from the courtyard garden and sent back to me. But I said, we talk about we have to be from mountains with cedars, and we call the mountains Atala. And it was like right away they knew exactly what I was talking about. The anthropologist with them from the Smithsonian had been busy, busy laughing up to that point at the concept of Native American contacts with North Africa.
Well, have you ever read that book, L. Taylor Hansen, Lucille Taylor Hansen wrote He Walked the Americas, but she also wrote a book called The Ancient Atlantic. And if you can get it for, it's an old book, it's a coffee table size, you can get it for $30 once in a while. Well, usually there's one online somewhere, but it's talking about exactly what you're talking about North Africa. Her father was the co-author of the continental drift theory.
Ah, okay.
But there was a solid gold amulet found on the ground in Texas that pictured the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid of Giza, and it may have been worn by, you know, somebody in royalty that ended up running like possibly the Mauritanians that ran over here during the time of Caligula when he sent six Roman legions against him and was going to...
Yes, that would be Alexander Helios and Cleopatra Selene.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Burroughs Cave.
Where do I live? Where do I live, friends?
Mm-hmm.
Were you in Kentucky, right?
Cross the river from Burroughs Cave.
Oh, really?
I'm across the river from Little Egypt.
Oh,
wow. Why do you think that area is called Little Egypt?
Well, it has always been because of the thousands of artifacts of that have come out of there written on. What is that, shale? Mm-hmm. I actually handled some. Red Hat had some briefly.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, most of it is shale, stone. Yeah, those Phoenicians got everywhere when the Portuguese first got down there to, wasn't that Brazil?
Mm-hmm.
On a cliff on the side of a mountain, and script in big, huge letters was BRZL in Phoenician, which means Iron Mountain.
Yep.
Well, the Piri Reis map, the Turkish admiral, he somehow got hold of it, but it apparently originated with the Phoenicians because they knew the topography of Antarctica before it was under the ice cap, because this Piri Reis map shows the topography of northern Antarctica, southern Africa, southern South America, all the way up above the Amazon, unmistakable. And the U.S. government didn't even know what, you know, it looked like under the ice until the 80s sometime. And but they knew, and that was what the ice cap's been there for, what, about 4,000 years? So these guys were flying the high seas 4,000 years and more years ago.
And we forget sometimes what the Phoenicians is a Greek word, what did they call themselves?
Red men.
Oh, really?
Maori. Maori. They called themselves people of the sea. Mm-hmm. The Greeks called them Phoenicians, red men, because of their paint job.
Mm-hmm. Well, every Japanese ship is something Maru.
Maru means circle in the Japanese, and that's a blessing that it will come back to port rather than sink. It's a similar sounding word, but it's not related. It's just like Adair made a lot of presumptions about Cherokee language based on Choctaw, and also he heard things in Hebrew that weren't there.
Well, I know up until 1945 at Tokyo University, the Japanese were teaching, they were the people of the rising sun because they migrated from the east.
Yes.
Across the ocean.
Well, yes, and because they claimed descent from the sun goddess.
And now they've got pottery shards that can be found at exact, you know, in Peru and in the southern island of Japanese chain. There's all kinds of stuff that's going on, and connections are being made nowadays.
Absolutely. I remember one thing I remember RT saying was that that I would live long enough to see the history of Native America completely rewritten, but he wouldn't.
Hmm.
And that's going on. He also said that if the ice cap of Greenland ever melted, there would be things there found there which would completely rewrite the concept of what had been happening in the Americas.
Hmm.
So
well,
we have a Greenlandic elder on the 28 grandfathers, so
oh, wow.
I'm waiting.
Well, they've already proved that the Kensington Stone... you know, prove the Swedes were here, you know, long before Columbus. Well, that, and folks, you just got to watch Who Really Discovered America, you know, on, because that, yeah, that's amazing. But if you ever get a chance to watch that 10,000 years BC or Ice Age Columbus, that's what talks about the Solutrians. And,
yeah, that, program on Who Really Discovered America. Scott Walter did part of the work on that one, or he did a lot of it. There's a runestone here about 20 miles from me, and I showed that to Wayne May, the editor of Ancient American, when he was here a couple of years ago. He got Scott Walter down here with the National Geographic photographer and took him out there. And but the owner of the property wouldn't let him publish that segment.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this one, this one's in a direct line from Kensington down to the runestone down there in Oklahoma, Heavener. It's in a straight line between those two.
Well,
I should point out, Scott, that Wayne May is also on the Grandfathers Council.
I saw that. Ron Pastore, it's not up online anymore, but he did a map study, and he called it Mount Matrix years ago. Then he got involved with the Jesse James Gold thing, and he said there was enough controversy. You know, he said he wanted it taken down, and I did. But I interviewed Ron, and he was the one that discovered that every place in the Americas where there are seven mounds, he says they're all connected by five-pointed stars. And he proved that using a map overlay. And he's at nationalgeomantic survey.com. He's the guy, in late 2009, he made a big splash on National Geographic about the hunt for Jesse James Gold. But he's a Cherokee descendant.
Well, what's his name?
Ron Pastore.
Oh, yeah. I talked to him a few years ago. I've seen those maps. Yeah, very interesting. Oh, back to something Brian mentioned just a second ago. I'm going to change the gears here for a minute. The elder there in Greenland, Angonquak.
Yes.
He was down there at that Return of the Ancestors gathering 3 years ago. And it was an eagle-condor gathering, bringing the South Americans and the North Americans together. And he came in from Greenland and did an opening ceremony on the second day. And their prophecy was, when the sea eagle of the far north flies with the eagle and the condor, then the circle is complete and healing can begin. So I got to see that prophecy fulfilled right in front of my eyes.
Yes, and their prophecy is that they're going to get their forests back.
Well, they started their sacred fire up there a year or so
Two years ago.
2 years ago, because they finally had enough wood to do it. They've been using whale oil all these years, and they finally had enough wood, and they had a big ceremony there, and everybody sent ashes from their sacred fires up to help start that one. And, so it was just 2 years ago, they finally have enough wood to make a sacred fire.
Right, and when I was at that same location back in 86, it was still under a glacier.
So did you get to go to that ceremony?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I was back there in 86 doing a wildlife relocation project. But I knew exactly where that place was, and they said, oh, we're going to do a sacred fire in a sweat lodge. I'm saying, using what for wood? They said, oh, we've got enough trees growing now. I said, where is this that you have enough trees growing? Because what they call a tree up there is what they call an Arctic willow, which is at best maybe waist high.
Yeah, we call a bush, a small bush.
Oh, yeah, I mean, or we call a bonsai right? And they said, no, the climate is changing. It's changing so quickly we're starting to have trees again. But, oh, this changes it.
Wow. Can you believe it? You know, and oh, gosh. And here we are. We're in our 50s, and you know, all this started, you know, when we were back in our 30s and whatever, and you know, a crazy old man like Rolling Thunder, you know, talking all that stuff, and but somehow, I just knew what he was saying was true, what a hoop.
Well, you know, I didn't meet him actually until after he had lost the leg, and he was on a lot of painkillers all the time, and so half the time he would say things to me, I would write it off to the meds.
Huh.
And I wish now that I hadn't, because of so much of what he said, the elders in Peru confirmed, the Catua elders confirmed, you know, all these people confirming these things, I'm going, man, why wasn't I taking notes? I was just trying to be nice to the sick old guy, and I should have really been paying attention.
Well, anybody that's studied psychology will tell you that, you know, booze or pills are a disinhibitor, and they you're more likely to spill stuff, you know, when you're under the influence than otherwise.
Yeah. And I would take the most ridiculous things he said, and I would repeat them to somebody like, or what to me seemed ridiculous, and I would repeat them to Hastings Shade, and he'd go, yeah, that's right. I'm going, you're kidding me. oh, my goodness. So sometimes we just really have to be humble when we're listening to people, even if they appear not to be making any sense at all, because it isn't always the way we see it.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Well, you know, we all get a lot of static from our Lakota brothers, but when I interviewed Ed McGaw, and I'll have him on again soon, he says, if you ever get static from a Sioux Indian, he says, just remind him that it was you guys that ran us out of Long Island out onto the plains. You know, he says, then they'll respect you. There'll be no more talk of...
You would be... That brings up a lot of stuff, and... I am also adopted Oglala, but it's amazing how few know that story and of why the I can mess you up big time. Do you know the word? They were not called the Lakota yet when they lived in the Southeast. Do you know the name they were called, according to the chiefs and according to, I believe, either Adair or Raffinesque's accounts of his interviews.
Not me.
No. Toltec.
Mm.
No way. Yes. That's not Toltec. Otomi. Otomi. And there is still a group down in Mexico that call themselves Otomi. Mm-hmm. They call themselves Otomi Toltec. All right. So the name that they were called before they were driven out and then called themselves Lakota or Dakota Nakota was Otomi, and that's the way we know them in the old stories.
I know they came from the east. I didn't know it was down in the southeast. I knew they came from the east.
I'm sure it depends who's telling the story, but
right.
the remnants, in according to our version of the story, those who were willing to learn agriculture and give up the annual raids on their neighbors at harvest time for food, like Magnificent Seven, those groups were allowed to stay behind, and that's why you have all these Siouan-speaking groups in the southeast, like the Catawba, like the Saponi, like the Okanichi.
Blackfoot in Illinois.
Yeah. And those who were willing to feed themselves were allowed to stay, the Monacan. So you have those groups, and those who wanted to keep the other lifestyle were escorted to the river. Putting it nicely.
Have you ever heard the story of how the Cherokee practice was that if there was any pilgrims coming through our area, and I guess the Iroquois may have done this too, but you know, say a family's passing through, and they basically would surround them and say, "Look, you got to make a choice here. We want you in our nation. You don't have any choice. You can your husband can choose to fight. We'll kill him. And we'll take the women and children, or you guys can just y'all come." And most of them did. So that's how we absorbed a lot of people. And that was told to me by a spotted snake chief down in Mississippi. And she told me that one of the old names for our chiefs or sub chiefs were known as spotted snakes.
So this is the original Hotel California. You can come, but you can never leave.
I have heard the story. Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. It's amazing, what you can find out when you sit around. But did either of you guys ever meet Dr. Tim Jones?
No.
No.
He came up to Missouri. He was being paid to be the ethnologist on the Aina Grant for Lola Shoals tribe. And he's a Cherokee descendant. He thought they were all frauds down there, and he got to digging into things and found out a lot of interesting stuff and talked to a lot of elders. But basically what he did is he went back into the archaeological records of digs that had been uncovered, cataloged, and then covered up and paved over, or streets or built houses. And basically he said he was able to prove back 800 years, and he could prove it back another 1,500 years with proper funding, that the Cherokees, because of the design of our stomp ground and ball field, he could prove that our ancient homeland, at least when we, because we travel back and forth, between south and north, he says, but the real jumping off place was northern Arkansas and southern Missouri.
Yes, that's a place where, according to the migration story, the people made a major split. And that's why it's referred to as the Land of Sorrows.
Mm-hmm.
Because the party that was coming up from Yucatan made a major split there, and one group went west and one group went northeast.
Interesting. They, Wow. It's been a long time since I talked with you, Brian. You've learned a lot more, and you're teaching me.
I must be a whole lot more smarter now, yep.
Well.
or you are for listening, one of the two.
Yeah, I just haven't been able to get out. I haven't been able to travel. But, wow. But see, there's that story that that we migrated from there. And the Catoo elders, this is according to John Red Hat, said that we, He said when we moved into the about the time of the height of Cahokia, which would have been about 900
mm-hmm.
years ago, he says we fought a war with the mound builders, and to end that war, we agreed to intermarry. And then we moved into the Ohio River Valley where we encountered the Iroquois. And he says, there was a real nasty war, and to stop that war, we agreed
mm-hmm.
to stop speaking our original language and
yes.
theirs.
Yes.
And Donald Robinson, the Uka down in Dallas, and other people still have remnants of the old, and some of the Ottawahees may still have some
mm-hmm.
of the original language. I'd be interested to hear that. To hear
oh,
that.
And yeah, and I'll tell you what it sounds like. because there was a man named Leon Secatero
okay.
of the Canyoncito Navajo who also kept, as well as
one of
the modern Navajo, what he called the old Navajo or ancient Navajo language.
Mm-hmm.
And when he started speaking that, if you've heard Navajo, you know what that sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
The old Navajo sounded almost like a dialect of Cherokee.
Hmm.
And I'm told, I don't know how accurate this is, but I am told that the old language sounded more like Hopi.
Hmm.
And now, gee, we came to a point where we split, we went east. Hmm. But
well,
if you think of the difference between Cherokee and the other Iroquoian languages, Cherokee has sounds in it, especially that TL sound, that the others don't. You do mm-hmm. find that TL sound in Nahuatl, and you find it down into the Mayan lands. So we almost, like I like to joke, we speak old Mohawk with a Mexican accent.
Well, Tim Jones said that the Hopi and the Cherokee were the twin fires.
Yes.
He said, anciently, he said, if there was ever a grand council, and people got together and let's use teepees, if either a Cherokee or a Hopi ever spoke up, said anything, everybody else shut up and listened.
Yes.
And the Catua contend that they are the chief tribe of all the tribes in North America, and if Creator would deliver a message to the other tribes, it would come through them.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it the equivalent of, you know, Creator's chosen people or something.
Yes, chosen people. Well, that's one of the translations that's actually given for Ketua.
Principal people.
Beloved people. Or no, that's Anishalagi.
Mm-hmm.
But for Ketua, one of the Aniketuagi, one of the translations that's given is chosen or complete people, the ones who really have the message.
Does either one of you know anything about the bundle that was in the old Cherokee Ark that was supposedly captured by the Lenape and carried to Canada?
Yes.
One chief up in Pennsylvania told me that if that ever comes back now in the United States, there's going to be a lot of changes. But I found out here recently, it was just last year, I was putting together the American Cherokee Association.com website for Terry and Joe Sittingall that my 11th grade grandfather, Savanuka, was the custodian of the Ark. And he was the Raven of Choate. He was the Speaker of the Council and War Chief. He didn't survive the Revolution,
mm-hmm.
or it would have been him rather than Okunstota.
Okay. Okay. Do you know the story of one of the pipes that was in the shape of what looked like a large red-tailed hawk?
No.
No. Okay. You know the pipe that was in the shape of a white turtle?
No.
No? Okay. Some of these some legendary contents of the Ark.
Oh. Well, I know there's a lot of pipes that are found in burials.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, particularly here in Tennessee, you know, there's still, you know, pot hunters There's laws against trafficking in these things, but there's still a lot of them here trafficked out of Tennessee, and I was just told they're just supposed to be left alone. But there are a lot of them. You know, sometimes they get plowed up by some farmer, but they're all over the place. And I ended up here up in the Cumberland Plateau, which is supposedly the old domain of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder. And it's the largest. Joel Skousen says that it is, as far as preppers go, he says if you're not going to relocate to Montana and Idaho, he said the Cumberland Plateau is what he calls the American Redoubt of the East.
Mm-hmm.
It's the largest wooded plateau, I believe, in the world. Stretches all the way from Alabama up through Kentucky, and it's about 2,000 feet in elevation. We get 52 inches of rain a year. It's a nice place to live.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the old stomping ground, and I live in a place called Lake Tunsi, and Tunsi is the Cherokee word from which the state of Tennessee got its name. From I had a ancestor that was on the territorial legislature for the territory south of the Ohio River, and that's where they got the name Tennessee. It's Tunsi.
Right.
So you know it was in the I know just tidbits about what was in that ark. I know Joseph Smith went looking for it, but that had already apparently been taken to Canada.
Right.
But it had metal plates in it, and it was guarded 24 hours a day by two guards, and they had barbed bronze arrowheads that they used to guard it with. And that's about all I know.
So that was the original ark from when the Lenapes came migrating through?
I don't know. They stole it, or stole it back, or they got it.
Because in recorded history, there were 63 Cherokee towns, and each one had their own ark.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd go to battle with them, and it was always in,
mm-hmm.
behind the white seat, and kind of like the Holy of Holies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But, no, I haven't heard the story about the one that was taken in battle with the Lenape. I know, I've heard the Wallamolem and the people that they came up against, and there was the Cherokees, and the Lenapes won and pushed the Cherokees south and went on through.
Well, Donald Robinson was telling me that it was his great-grandfather that wrote the 1827 Constitution, and kind of to poke a finger in the eye of the government and the Cherokee Nation, he assumed the title of UCA. And if it wasn't for a letter he wrote to George Groundhog, there would be no five civilized tribes today, because that set Groundhog in motion to Groundhog versus the United States, or versus, and anyway, the courts ordered the Cherokee Nation and the other tribes back into business. And but he said that the UCA originally, he wore white all the time, his feet never touched the ground, he lived in a stone house, which is a kosher practice, and he was carried around in a sedan chair, and his only job pretty much was to go around to each town once a year and open the ark and read the law to the people.
Wow.
Yes, and one of the stories is that in public he did not himself speak. He had a speaker because he was so powerful that if he spoke and misspoke something, he would speak it into being. So he actually had a speaker who said in public whatever needed to be said.
Oh, wow. Which would have been my ancestor, Savinuka.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Interesting.
So you have that. And there was a problem with somebody who whose name I won't mention, but who I'm sure we all know, who sort of took on that role of being carried around, wearing white, being carried around in a sedan chair and feet never touching the ground, blah, blah, blah. And several elders of the CNO and the Eastern Band went to to speak and try to give gentle correction, which is the Cherokee way as opposed to confrontation. And
used to be.
one of the things that was said very poetically and nicely was, it was time to walk barefoot upon Mother Earth again. In other words, quit having your followers carry you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an old Muskogean tradition. Negroes of the various Muskogean tribes
yes.
in the Southeast, a long time ago, used those sedan chairs.
Yes. And the Natchez as well.
Well, and from what I understand, when Redbird Smith went to get the fire, that's who he got it from, the Natchez.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, that's that town's just, you know, about 30 miles south of my mother's home in Vicksburg.
The Natchez, who also wrote on metal plates that looked something like inverted mushrooms and were somewhat large.
And whose history goes back 4,000 years to Poverty Point.
Mushrooms, that's interesting.
No, it's kind of inverted mushrooms or that kind of spade shape you find almost like a Peruvian tumi. That type of shape.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put
it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Interesting. I saw a DVD a couple years back about on the subject of the mushroom. And I said that's the reason why the Hebrew priests wore a mushroom-shaped hat, as did others. And there's other connections. And yeah, it's amazing what's out there that you can learn. You just have to get out and do a little bit of studying. But yeah, like you said, Cherokees when they go after something, they go after it in depth.
Yes.
Well, I was hoping, you know, I if I'd had any sense, I would have emailed them. Well, we'll just have to get Panther, and we could all get back on and have, you know, us and Panther and Wayne. That would be an interesting discussion.
That would be. I'd tune in again.
Have either of you guys read Tell Them They Lie by Traveler Bird?
Yep.
Yes.
I bought a copy for $100. Yeah.
Well, Wayne May has them all printed up again. He's just trying to get the last permissions of the Bird family to print it. So you might be able to wangle an unauthorized copy from Wayne.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
But according to, you know, the real Sequoia, the Cherokee had writing for hundreds of years.
Yep.
It was not developed in 9 months. Any linguist will tell you you can't do that.
Yeah.
And they got it from a small band of travelers that had come from the South.
Mm-hmm.
Like hundreds of years before.
Yep.
Well, yeah, the story said that every transaction that went on was recorded by someone in the Scribe Society, and they wrote
right.
it on corn husks or bark or whatever. And but the Berber connection, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, all Sequoia did, he was one of the last of the scribes to make it available to everybody. But he didn't invent it.
Mm.
The Cherokees had it for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm. And they killed his family, the Cherokee Light Horse killed his family and cut his, nose and ears off and his fingers off. And that picture we see of Sequoia, that's not Sequoia.
That's George Guess.
Yep. Yep, they accused him of witchcraft.
Yeah. But he had already done three migrations of 5,000 each out of Cherokee country, one down to the Brazos River, Texas, one to Oklahoma, and one down to Mexico, 20 years before the Trail of Tears. So when the Cherokees mm-hmm. got out there to Oklahoma, there's already a Cherokee community there. And that was a problem because the newcomers thought they were the boss. And they just, we've been here for 20 years.
What do you think about all this? That's you that's left on the line, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
What do you think?
Hear
about
me?
Yeah, I can. What do you think?
I thought it was interesting. The one that he mentioned about the Tomi and the Lakota connection was especially interesting to me. But,
and we got Forrest back on the line.
Yeah, I laid the phone down and disconnected, and I called back and couldn't get through.
Well, I started feeling you guys' bladders, so I figured, uh-oh, I better let these guys take care of business. But, wow, it's been a long time since I'd forgotten that I talked with Brian. And but, yeah, he's another Rolling Thunder. He's another Thunder person. And, Rolling Thunder, wow. He, we've got about 11 usable minutes left. Got anything else you wanted to say, Forrest?
A little different subject. Are you familiar with the Las Lunas Decalogue Stone down there?
Mm-hmm, a little bit. John Red Hat lived about 4 miles from it.
Now, the second time I was down there, checking it out, took my cousin down there, and there was a Catholic priest down there taking some people on a tour. So I got to hear his story. And the story was that a bunch of the sailors that brought the Spaniards over were Sephardic Jews from Spain. And they got permission from the governor down there in Mexico City to go up and start a colony. And they ended up there on that mountain at Las Lunas. And of course, as soon as they got away from the Spaniards, and they went back to being Jewish instead of Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And this priest is of Mexican Spanish descent, and the Indians around there, 40% of them carry the Cohenim genetic marker.
That was in the Denver newspaper.
And he's one of them. So I don't know if he's a Jewish priest or a Catholic rabbi.
Catholic, he's a Catholic priest.
Well, he's a Catholic priest, but he's Jewish. So I was calling him a Catholic rabbi.
Well, there's a rabbi that lived in Colorado that was, he's passed away now, but he was one of the original rabbis. I forget his name right now, but he was a close friend of Magid Ben Yosef. But this guy, he was one of the guys that decided, who was going to go to Israel and who didn't. He was very much involved with the restoration of blessings for the Moranos, who were Spanish and Indians that were forced to convert and there's an entire, movement of those people that are returning to that old faith, and they're all over the Southwest. But, I heard that. But from what I understood, that stone was a mezuzah, Have you ever been to an Orthodox Jewish house? They have a little piece of metal. It looks like a scroll that they nail to the door of their house, and they kiss their fingers and touch it, and that's reminding them to remember certain commandments when they come and go. And the really Orthodox people actually encapsulate a small scroll that will have certain scriptures in it, but that would basically be what was on the Las Lunas Decalogue stone, which is what the Jews call the Ten Statements.
Yeah, and that's exactly what that priest said, that was the mezuzah, that you have to go up that path to get to the village at the top of that mountain there.
Yeah, there's an article online about it.
And it was the archaic Hebrew script.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about 2,000 years old, and there's also another stone up there that depicts an eclipse and a comet, and they can date that to 106 A.D., is when that one happened. So that was a really old settlement.
Yeah.
Well, the original settlement was 2,000 years old, and then the next settlement became was the Sephardic Jews around 1500. So
I think
two different settlements.
I think they may have found remnants of a mikveh. May have been a spring there up there at one time. They require live water, running water, and I think. Some people went up there and they looked around and they said, "Oh yeah, this is an old Jewish colony or Hebrew colony." See, at the time of Solomon, King Solomon contracted with the king of Tyre, the Phoenicians, to bring certain materials. And of course, they know if there's certain metals, they can tell you, what volcano they came out of, any piece of gold or iron ore or whatever. But they needed, iron ore from the Great Lakes, and there was a lot of cedars over here. And so they came over here and got a lot of things. And there's been other, remnants of Phoenician people that were stranded over here. So there's a lot of history that's coming to light now. Very interesting. Very interesting. Forrest, did you ever have a chance to meet Red Hat?
No.
Yeah, that was he was quite a guy. I met him like Rolling Thunder at the